Coming to you live from the Jim Butler Ballroom at the Mitzvah Hotel. It's time for another commute with your hosts, Faye and Brenda. This is Drive Time to Nova.
Well, as the announcer says, I am the Faye driver, and once again, we're sitting here in the Drive Time to Nova studios in Tonopah. And I'm joined, of course, by the one and only
Brenda Boo. I'm up here in the sister city, also named Tonopah.
Right. How's it going, Brenda?
It's pretty good. It's been a dreary day here up in Tonopah. How about for you?
Yes, Tonopah North has been dreary as well.
All towns lead to Tonopah.
That's right. You've been working hard. I was out driving in the driving rain today, too, actually.
Were you running errands, or were you having some fun?
No, it's been a work day.
Mm. So, Faye, on your last show that you just released, you were talking about going to a funeral for your uncle.
Yes.
You were wrestling with this idea of a celebration of life as opposed to funerals.
Right.
What a ripoff it was for both your aunt and your uncle. And you said you weren't really feeling it, you know? It's like it felt so arbitrary, false. Yeah. And I wanted to follow up with you on that.
Sure thing. Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, did you have a lot of interaction with this side of your family since you've been an adult? Or is this all memories from when you were a kid?
Yeah, no, the interaction has definitely petered out since I became an adult. Plus, I moved away from that end of the country. This was essentially my hometown. I left that place about 15 to 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So since I left, there's been very little interaction with all of the people who surround that area and the close family that's up there. I only see them when other people have funerals or when there's a major family event occurring.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely have grown apart. And all the cousins that I interacted with when I was a child, they obviously have all grown up as well, and they have families and children and careers, and many of them are living away from the hometown as well. So many of us have kind of scattered. So I have really strong, positive memories about spending my time with these people. I have to say they're very important to me. I miss the fact that we can't spend more time together. I would have liked to have spent a whole lot more time with that family, but it's just a logistic problem, right?
Right. Sometimes when you are close with somebody and then time passes and then all you have are these old memories to rely on, even though you have those warm feelings for them, it's hard or almost probably impossible to really kind of wrap your brain around what's actually happened, right? Because sometimes death takes a long time to really connect in all your brain cells what's happening.
Yes, definitely.
So when you were talking about everything seemed so artificial and everything, I've always felt that way too. Like every funeral I've ever been to seemed really odd because I never was super involved because they're always like relatives from, you know, farther out, right? Because my mom's side is families, they're professional breeders. There's just tons and tons.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You know?
Right.
And, but I remember when my grandma died, my last grandma died, I did get upset, and I can remember making the distinction in my head. It wasn't that me and my grandma were so close. It was because, you know, she was just like a hard ass, right? She's just like that type of woman that raised her kids in the Depression and quit belly aching, and she wasn't real super
touchy-feely.
Yeah, right. But I do remember crying because it was like the end of this era. Like, she was the last grandparent. The house was being sold. my whole life growing up, she lived in this house across the street. It just felt like all this stuff coming to an end. We grieve about different things at different times for different reasons, right?
Certainly, yeah.
So when you're in the middle of it, it does feel so weird. Like, did you go to the viewing? Did they do a viewing of the body?
I think he was cremated. They made a big show of the presentation of this box that arrived, you know, that came in and went down the aisle, and just a little wooden box, right? There was no viewing. And the whole experience for me was disconnected, I guess. I think the best way to describe it is that I was disconnected, maybe because of the great length of time from when I knew them last or interacted with them last, even though I saw these people a couple of years ago, but still, the strong interactions, the really memorable things, the period of time growing up with them, like, we all just sort of become, we're adults now, and we're living our own lives, and we just don't interact with people, or like these people, our relatives, on a very homey level, I guess, for want of a better word. When I see these cousins and aunts and uncles, it's for a very short period of time, and we're outside of our regular domains, right? We're not at Auntie's house, mm-hmm. Where we would sit around and play cards or, you know, whatever, play in the garden and goof around on the tractors. We're in some hall somewhere, drinking tea and having cookies and mourning the loss of some other relative who just passed away.
Right.
So I think our interactions aren't as powerful or heartfelt, I guess.
Well, plus, if you're like me, anybody that doesn't pop out children, and you're talking to people who have popped out children, there's a definite disconnect, because they look at you kind of like, mm-hmm. you have cheated the system somehow.
Exactly. That's right, too. And it's amazing, because the children were a strong component of this last funeral, uncle's funeral, mm-hmm. because he had two children, a son and a daughter, and they both had their own sets of children. And the children made a presentation at the funeral as well. And then everybody else that I know, their life is completely taken away or overrun, or everything they do is about their children. Right. I really noticed that at this last funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is about the children.
How'd that make you feel?
I wasn't put off by it.
No, I mean, did it make you feel like, I wish I had those experiences?
I will never wish for children.
Okay.
Well, that's not entirely true. Some of these kids were really eloquent. I mean, mm-hmm. a couple of them made some really amazing speeches. And I was extremely proud of these children who were able to stand up in front of a group, like there were 160 people at this funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids stood up, and these are like young kids, 6 and 9 year old kids,
aww.
Who are standing up and saying how much they love their grandpa and wish they could go fishing with him again, and talking about all these memories. Like, I couldn't have performed a speech as eloquent as some of these kids were doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, hats off to Uncle for creating his own kids, who created such magnificent kids himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was some impressiveness going on at this funeral, I have to say.
Well, in your podcast, you said that it made you feel like you hadn't done anything important with your life. What you did, you liked martinis and you drove like a maniac.
I didn't do anything of value.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was a little off the cuff, because
okay.
I know that I do things of, I have value in this world.
Okay, good.
But, that was a bit of a joke. My comments in that regard were just that, like, who cares? Like, I'm not going to see you for another 3 to 5 years. So, I mean, what's the point of us catching up and talking about what I do with my life and what you do with your life? Like, it's this sort of non-essential banter that we go on, that we, I have this sort of this prepared story about what my, tell me everything about your life in 25 words or less, right?
I always hated that too. My family likes to do family reunions, and for the last few years that I lived in Iowa, I just stopped going because it always just felt like I had nothing to say, you know, because I didn't have children and I didn't have a career, and it just, like, everything that's lacking for me in my life just seemed to be like, oh, here's my lack of accomplishments on display, do with them what you will, you know.
Right.
And because I never had kids, once you say, oh, do you have kids, or, you know, everything just stops. The conversation stops. I've never wanted kids either. I think a lot of people don't want kids, but they just don't know what to do with themselves, or they could have accidents. And I don't think people who choose to have parents are saints, and I don't think people who don't have kids, I don't think we're, you know, we're malcontent devils, you know. I just feel like maybe we just know ourselves a little bit better.
Yeah, perhaps.
You don't feel that way?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm indifferent to children and the whole concept of having children.
Oh.
Although, as I get older, like, I spent a lot of time with my brothers during this funeral period here.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very involved in their children's lives, obviously, and their children are very important to them. Even, I mean, all their kids are mostly all grown up and moved on and have spouses of their own and houses, and, you know, none of them are having children yet, but I mean, they're out of the house primarily. But still, children seem to be a very major focus for most heterosexual couples.
True.
But
then they grow up, and if they don't have grandchildren, or even if, it's just a never-ending cycle of reproducing. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. Just like, here, we had you, we raised you, now spit
us out.
Why
aren't you making us a grandchild?
Right, yeah. Yep. So, I feel like children, good kids are seductive, because you see a good kid and you're like, wow. Right.
I want one of those.
I want one of those good kids. But, you know, take your dog and then magnify that by 1,000, and that's a child.
Exactly. Yeah, I do. I would like to say one thing in my defense.
Yeah.
In my defense of children hating, I would like to say that I do recognize why and how important children are to the people who have them.
Well, yeah.
So there is a value in creating a life. And that thing that you create, that child, is extremely important to the people that create them.
Yeah.
That person does well and is a productive member of society and succeeds and sort of carries on the family name and all that. So I recognize that there is a value. It's just something that I have decided that I'm not willing to participate in.
I used to think, you know, being a white woman, you have to think about whether you want to have kids or not, because you carry the oven around with you.
Right.
And I thought about it, you know, several times, but it never was like a yearning for me. Like, the women end up having more than one kid, there's some kind of chemical thing that almost makes it like obsessive. And I've heard women talk about, like, they become obsessed with their children.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, though, I always knew there was something in me that didn't have, I couldn't do it by myself. I knew that I would need a strong partner to kind of take up some of that slack, because I knew I was afraid if I was home alone with him all the time, I knew that I would end up resenting this child. I mean, I just, mm-hmm. It was really clear to me that having a kid wasn't just something you winged, you know? It was just like, this is an intense intense obligation and responsibility. And I don't...
Right.
So I never felt like anybody I was with would really be there. They always seemed so, like, into themselves and distracted. And
right.
And I was just like, I can't do this all by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So... I'm not saying that as an insult to the people I was with, but I'm not, like, you know, I'm not that strong. I guess, you know, a lot of women end up picking up all this slack, and I didn't want to end up resenting my husband. I wanted to be married more than I wanted to have kids. But anyway, I'm back to the funerals. I think it's weird that the way we treat our dead in general, you know, mm-hmm. we fill them up with chemicals so they won't decompose, which...
Right.
Why? What's this about? And we put them in a box. We spend thousands of dollars on a box that nobody is ever going to see again. Just, it's really strange
the yes, way it is. Is. It's all in the name of honoring them or, like, sending them off. You know, the Vikings would build a boat and push it out into the water and light it on fire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a pretty... extensive bit of work too, right?
Yes.
To build a boat from scratch.
Right.
And then light it on fire and send them off to Valhalla, I guess.
Have you ever thought about what you want done with your remains?
Just because I've buried a couple people in my life.
Yeah.
And done probate, the, you know, the court legal proceedings for people who die, I just want just cremate me, and yeah, I don't know, put me in a box and put me on a shelf if you want.
You want you want to be on somebody's shelf?
Yeah, no, like just in the back of the cupboard. Like, I don't need to be on display or anything like that.
What about just burying your ashes?
Yeah, that's fine. I once thought that I might like to be scattered over Butt Point, which is this place in my hometown that as kids we used to go to. It overlooked the city.
I know. You called it Butt Point because you would ride your motorcycles to the top and smoke a cigarette and throw your butts out.
That's exactly right. Yep.
I remember you saying that.
So I thought it might be romantic to have my ashes scattered off Butt Point, but I don't really think that anymore.
It's kind of weird thinking about little pieces of Faye here and there. And, oh, there goes his nose.
Right.
I want to be cremated.
It's the most economical, by the way.
Right, and what a waste. What a waste of ground. It's just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everybody wants to be King Tut or something now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sorry your uncle died. As you know, one of my uncles coincidentally passed away, like, within days of yours. It's
yeah.
very odd.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing the same thing. Celebration of life, cremation. It's a lot of parallels.
Right.
But he was much older. He was, you know, he was in his early 80s, so he died of much different circumstances, so.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, is there anything else you want to say?
The strange thing about this particular funeral was that the death was kind of unexpected.
Yeah, that's really hard.
And this was a really vibrant individual who really enjoyed his life and lived a very full life. Mm-hmm. So it was very sad in that, and I talked about on my show that we're referring to about how much him and his wife, my aunt, loved each other, and they were such a successful and loving couple. So, you know, I grieve for that. I grieve for the fact that this wonderful love affair that they had is over, and you know, that he was such an amazing and wonderful and energetic guy. So this funeral was a little harder than the other ones that I've been to, which mostly tend to be people who are at the end of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And are ready to be moving on, and this guy absolutely was not. So, you know, as you mentioned at the top end of this show, grieving takes many different routes, right? And I may not have been grieving very much at the funeral, but you know, it sort of every once in a while you get a little pang of grief and sadness about how much I'm going to miss this uncle.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're always the first one to say that you don't have a heart. And you always, just about, not even about this kind of stuff, but other stuff. Like, whenever I say something about true love, you practically barf into the microphone. Like, bleh, whatever. But I don't even know, like, I feel like you don't really believe that. Is that true or not?
That I don't have a heart?
No, that you don't believe in true love when you're sitting here talking about, in a very loving way, about your aunt and uncle.
Well, you know, I know that it can happen for people, but I think most people fool themselves into thinking that they're in love. And I just think, for me, love is fleeting. I can't say that I've ever been head over heels in love with someone that I can't go on with my life without this such and such a person. So I may not have experienced it, but I know that love is a thing.
Love is a thing. This just in from Faye Driver. Love is indeed a thing. I don't know it, but
like those sickening, that sickening couple, Tim and James from
Stop.
Taste Like Burning.
Stop. Why do you make me edit this?
Those two people are so much in love. Ugh.
Oh my God, we have enough enemies. Why are you saying these things?
that's complete respect for those two geeks.
Oh, great! It sounded like it the way you were just saying it. Well, I've been in love lots of times, and it wasn't like you didn't feel like you could go on, but it took away some of the quality of your life. That's what it felt like.
What? Say what? You were in love, but it.
So, like, you said, I don't. You said that you'd never been in love with somebody and you never felt like you couldn't live without them. Well, yeah, you don't feel like you're just going to not be able to exist without them, but a definite quality of life would be gone if you didn't have that person in your life. And when eventually they do go away, you mourn the death of that relationship.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. No, I mean, I know there's. I mean, I love people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like whatever. Yeah, okay, I love people, but if you asked me to name how many times I've been head over heels in love, goo goo gaga for somebody,
mm-hmm.
I can only think of two instances.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Kristen in grade 4, who was my first kiss.
Aww.
And then some other guy.
Some other guy. Kristen was a girl.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What about that woman, the blonde beauty that you moved across country?
Oh, right, her. Oh, yeah. Yeah, she was pretty hot, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know, Faye. You're a conundrum.
All these women, though, they just turned me off.
Oh, please.
I had so much love for these girls. And
a fourth grade girl,
yeah.
And one girl in high school. these two girls, especially the fourth grader, really just did a number on you.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
I get more love from my cars than I do from any girl or boy in the world.
Please, shut your mouth. That's just not even true.
I don't know, Brenda. You don't know what it's like.
I don't. You don't? Why, what's going on up there in your little house?
Massaging that shifter.
Oh, gross.
Pushing that clutch in.
Well, who was it? Ed said something about one of your shows sounding pornographic. Is that why you're always having to clean up? Ew, gross.
All right, this is taking a turn now.
It certainly has taken a nasty turn. My goodness. Well, I feel like you have a lot of people in your life that care and love you. you may not love them back, but they love you.
They're always tweeting me. You know, you got some time for me today?
Who would that be? Since we brought up cars and how you like to massage and clean them and rub them in various undercarriage places, can we just get to the bottom of this once and for all? Faye Driver,
yes. Mm-hmm.
What is the deal with you and your love of vehicles? Please to explain to all of us. Where did this start? Why do you get such joy out of it?
It's because it's fun to make a machine do the things that it was designed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I guess primarily it's because I like machinery and I like understanding how things work. When you're driving a car the way that I sometimes drive my cars, which is pretty aggressively, shall we say. Or if you're flying an airplane, for instance, you really need to understand how everything works if you want to get the best of the machine out of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I get all my joy, is learning how this thing functions and learning how hard can I push it, how fast can I make the RPMs go, how much G can I put into this corner. It's all of these little intricacies, and what happens when I step on the brake like this, and you know, how quickly can I go around this corner without killing myself. It's all very exciting. It's all sort of born out of the learning how to manipulate the machine, I think.
But you take this passion that you have to an extreme that I've never seen, and it's a consistency that I've never seen either. Like, I have never gotten into a person's car time after time after time and had it look model room clean, like with you. That takes a lot of time and energy to be keeping it up to this standard constantly. How many hours a week do you think you spend just vacuuming and wiping off the inside of your car? Cars, I guess.
Well, I don't know. Like, probably. Well, I only clean them when they get dirty, so.
So when a human has gotten in the car.
Yes.
And they get out and they've left and gone back to America, or anybody,
right.
the person you live with.
Mm-hmm.
Every time that happens, you clean up after them, right? You don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about yourself?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Typically, whenever I mean, if I can, when I drive into my garage, I try to immediately vacuum out the car. It only takes like 3 to 5 minutes if it's just me.
Mm-hmm.
But if I've been transporting passengers around, I'll spend, you know, I can spend an hour just doing a general clean.
Sorry.
But yeah, so if you want a weekly figure, like if I do a good cleaning on a car, I will spend 4 hours just cleaning the car. Like we just had this big trip. We traveled 700 miles there and back. And so I had to clean the spy car up pretty good, so that took me about 4 hours, and I didn't even wash it.
Wow. Oh my god.
But I have my dog in the car. I mean, that changes things.
True. His hair sticks, too.
Yeah, exactly. Gets in all those little tiny holes of that leather.
I'm surprised you let him in that car.
I know. If I had my druthers, he'd be strapped to the roof in a kennel like, what's his name?
I don't know what his name is, but that's a lie. You're just sitting here lying to me, left and right. I see him. You guys have a whole little scenario that happens, or a routine. Max gets in the car. You roll down the window. He shoves his head out for a few minutes. He drools. And when he gets that out of his system, he lays down.
Mm-hmm. It's just because, I mean, I do this because I have a lot of respect for these machines.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them to look nice, and I want them to run and be mechanically sound to the point of perfection is what I want, which I, you know, you don't always necessarily achieve. So I want things to be nice. I want it to look good. I guess, in a sense, I want people to be impressed, too, that, wow, look at this car. It's just, like, brand new.
It always looks brand new.
And so I guess that's important to me.
One of the cutest things you ever did when I first met you is when you were running around the car, opening the doors for people and shutting them. I just wondered, where did you ever pick that up from? Because you don't always do that, I mean, but in special situations, you do that for people.
Yeah, well,
when did that start?
Because I want people to be treated like royalty. I think we all deserve to be pampered. It's about pampering.
But if somebody tries to do that for you, you tell them to knock it off.
You think so? Well, I guess because I don't want anybody to go to any special effort just for little old me.
So why do you think people would want that kind of treatment from you then? Because it, I mean, I know what you mean.
Because people should feel special.
Mm-hmm.
You should feel like you're the most important person in the world sometimes.
Mm-hmm. You make it hard for people to do that for you. Just acknowledgement would be nice.
Okay, I acknowledge that I'm a difficult person.
No, that's not what I meant. Well, like at Thanksgiving, was it last year? Well, I would have had to have been last year. No. And yeah. I was like, I'm going to cook you a Thanksgiving dinner. And then like a half hour into it, Faye was cooking us a Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, but you didn't know my kitchen.
Well, I just felt funny trying to take over. I did make a mean mousse, though.
That was an awesome mousse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All those eggs. Who knew that mousse was just tons of eggs whipped mm-hmm. beyond recognition? I didn't know that.
And a lot of chocolate, though.
And a lot of chocolate, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you keep it up. I guess that's my amazement, is that you keep it up. Like, I have these tendencies. Like, when I first started cleaning, and I was cleaning for other people, one of my biggest frustrations was I hated that I had to hurry and not do it the way I thought would need to be properly done.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started my own business, that was some of the biggest pleasure I got, was just like, okay, now I'm going to do it exactly the way I think it ought to be done. So I can see that I can have these tendencies, like, but then it just becomes like too much work and I just give up on it. Like, I haven't vacuumed my car, my truck for...
Don't tell me.
I don't have no idea when the last time I vacuumed it. I keep it picked up, but there's grass all over and...
Uh-huh.
And I just don't have it, that kind of tenacity to keep
but
it
it's,
up.
But it's a bit of therapy for me as well.
Yeah.
Because when if I'm working on a car, it takes me away. It becomes a singularly focused activity for me. So it lets me, like, all I do is worry about this car or think about this car and work on it, and it gives me joy because I like being around the thing, and I like to see, oh, look at this, there's another little scrape here to be fixed, and I can gauge the wear and tear on the car, and it just takes me away from any other worries or concerns that I might have. So that's a big component as well for me. It's very cathartic for me to work on these things.
Hmm. Does it have anything to do with the connection with your brothers and your dad? Or?
It may. I know that you know, both of my brothers are involved in the car industry. One of them is an auto body man painter and rebuilds cars and fixes them and repairs them and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one works for a dealership in the maintenance area. So he, you know, he does oil changes and all that kind of stuff. So it definitely is, it is a family trait, I guess. It is a common ground for us. We can talk about these things, and we take a lot of joy in hearing each other's stories about what happened here, and I did this, and so it does sort of bring a common ground for me and my brothers, especially because we live very different lives. One of my brothers is extremely religious, so that separates us in some way. My other brother is very involved in his family and his children, so that separates us in some ways. Plus, we're many miles apart from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't communicate regularly at all.
Right.
So there is a certain common ground. And I think because I feel like I don't have much credibility with my family, because for most of my life I feel like I've been an outcast because I was a homosexual, and I've been shacked up with these men all my life, and they always wished that that had never happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this common ground of this car thing sort of gives me a way back into their lives in some small way.
It feels like you have to be the one that's always putting out the olive branch. Like you were talking about not communicating. I haven't spoken with one sister since they moved here, so that's almost a year. It's probably been a year now since we've mm-hmm. talked. And same with my brother. I think maybe some emails, but we haven't spoken on the phone. So, you know, it's like when I made the decision to move here, that was one of the things. It was just like, well, I don't have much connection with my family, and it seems like, oh, I was correct and accurate in thinking that, right?
Right, yeah.
But I felt like I haven't had much credibility with them either. I felt like when I got married, I really felt like that they respected me. It was just like, oh, look, Brenda's finally doing something that is normal, and, you know, she... And then when the marriage ended...
Oh, brother.
There, you know, whatever credibility I had went out the mm-hmm. window, as they say. Well, I wanted to say that I've always been impressed with the way you handle your cars. I get the sense, like, when I first started hanging around you, like, I've got to be so careful of this car because look at the way he treats it. It's perfect. If anything ever happened to it, he probably would lose his mind. But then I see you're not really like that. I mean, I was surprised when you're like, oh, yeah, I dinged up this window. And when you work on your cars, you're very patient. And I haven't been around a lot of people that were really patient. And I really appreciate that, watching you just like, I can tell you're thinking it through and you're very methodical and patient with other people. I mean, you let me drive your vehicles before. That's something I never thought you would consider doing, letting other mm-hmm. people drive your cars. And there's when we were together one time not that long ago, when you were considering having to get rid of the spy car because it wasn't starting and it was stopping, and I was with you that one day, and it really took quite a bit for you to lose your kind of cool there at the end. I could tell you're like, all right, that's fucking enough, you know. But right. you took you a long time to get there, and I was impressed.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you handled it, you're just to everybody who wasn't there, he started flagging down people asking for a jump, and just like 10 minutes later, we were on our way.
Right.
That would take a lot more psyching. I would have to stand there and think about that for a long time before I could just start flagging people down. Like, well, what else can I do? I don't want to talk to all these strangers.
You get better, much better at that when you've had some experience whoring yourself out, Brenda. It's much easier.
Oh, my goodness. And there you go. Do you feel like these cars add to your value as a person? Do you feel like because you own these nice vehicles that also gives you more credibility?
Well, I guess, yes. Absolutely. There is this component about, like, these are expensive cars, and people think that, wow, this guy owns a Porsche. He must be a prick. He must be a major prick, or he's some kind of a big deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I recognize that there's a certain amount of cachet with these cars that I own. I kind of try to dispel that sort of feeling about them. I have to admit, it feels pretty special when you can drive up to a restaurant or a hotel in your big black BMW, mm-hmm. and, you know, everyone piles out of the car and goes into the restaurant or whatever. I mean, that makes me feel pretty good about myself. So I admit there is this, there's an egotistical bent to this,
mm-hmm.
where I really appreciate the fact that, oh, this is a special car, and I feel really special doing this thing, and here's my people that are with me, and we're going to go into this place, and we're going to tear it down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I admit that sometimes I feel really good about myself when I can put this thing on display, mm-hmm. and show myself, hey, look at me.
I know that one time when you let me drive Manuel, at first, you know, I was just trying to get the feel of the clutch and the brake and, you know, where the spot was where you needed to engage and give more gas and whatever. But then once I got that and I put my foot on that gas pedal and I could feel all that power and I touched the wheel and just barely took anything and it was so tight. Everything was so tight. I mean, it just took me that one little drive and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I want one of these now. I get it.
Right.
And it did make me feel special, like when we would get in and out of that car. I don't feel it so much like with the spy car. It's nice, but it just, it doesn't have that same status that the Porsche has, because mm-hmm. it's low to the ground. It's got that big front end, and you're always talking about how angry it sounds.
Right.
Whereas the spy car is more of a luxury item. You're just driving in this sleek black car that's really comfortable.
Mm-hmm. So. Yes, they're two very different machines.
Mm-hmm.
And they really invoke two sort of different feelings and experiences. And to me, they both have significant value because
mm-hmm.
I so love driving that big black spy car. You know, on long trips and things, it's such, it's so comfortable and luxurious.
It is. It's
and
quiet.
And then on the other hand, sorry, go ahead.
I just, it's quiet.
Right.
So quiet.
And then on the other hand, there's this raucous Porsche with all the feel of the handling, and you get such a different driving experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really feel the road, and it's a very exciting car to drive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I own these cars, not because of the cachet of the badge that's on the front of them, but for the kind of experience that you have when you're driving them. It's all about the feeling.
I know. Whenever I've only driven it a couple times, but when I've driven the spy car, what do I tend to do when I get in there? Have you noticed?
You drive very fast.
I don't even realize it. All of a sudden, I look down and I'm like, oh, shit. I mean, it's so smooth. You just don't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be going 30 miles over the speed limit.
Right.
And it's, yeah. It's, sorry about that.
That's all right.
Well, speaking of status, you can also get status from the clothes that you wear. And you have said to me on so many different occasions, I need to get new clothes. But then I come and see you, and there you are in the same old thing. teasing. But I wanted to know your attitude about clothes. Because one time you guys were talking, you and your husband were talking about how...
The love of my life.
There you go. saying how it was frustrating to you because girls got to wear all the nice colors and you always felt like you were wearing drab stuff. Now, Mr. Anderson needs to figure out that holes are not an acceptable thing to have in your pants.
Right, exactly, yes.
So I think that's funny when he was saying, oh, I wish I could dress in pretty colors. I was like, how about working on not having any holes in your pants? Just teasing.
Uh-huh.
Just
that's
teasing.
Funny.
Anyway, so what is your feeling about clothes? Like, for me, clothes are very utilitarian, like utility-oriented. Like, I kind of have a uniform, and I'm pretty happy with what I have. I would like to have higher quality clothes. I would dress differently if I had more money. But for mm-hmm. me, it's just basically about covering up my body and feeling comfortable.
Mm.
And having, I like things around my neck. I like a collar better. So I definitely have a uniform in my head. I basically buy the same things over and over and over again. But what do you think about your clothes?
Well, I kind of hate all my clothes. Because if I had my druthers, I would spend way more money on clothes. And I do tend to spend a lot of money on underclothes, but let's not get into that.
Frequently come to my home here in the Americas.
So aside from the underclothes, if I could, I would buy ridiculously expensive clothes. Like, I would love to have all kinds of designer names, and I would have way more clothes than I currently do.
What style, though?
Oh, well, I like everything. I'd like to have more suits. I would love to have, like, Calvin Klein suits, Louis Vuitton. Louis Vuitton does not really do anything for me. I'd have more Zegna clothes, Zegna.
Oh.
Ermenegildo Zegna, is that what it is?
Whatever. Never heard of this person.
Anyway, like high-end stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'd have more suits and blazers, and I don't think I'd like to wear a lot of ties. I don't think that would be my thing, but...
Collared shirts, or would you wear a t-shirt flat, like no collar underneath your jacket?
No, I'd wear button-down collar shirts, and
mm-hmm.
I'd have shirts where the cuffs and the collars were separate, you know, mm-hmm. where you'd have to attach them separately.
Oh, that is fancy.
With cufflinks... I'd have cufflinks galore.
Wow.
That's the kind of stuff that I'd like to have.
What color family would you have? Would it be neutrals or pastels or blues or purples? What colors do you like?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of blues, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
I like blue a lot. And burgundies and wines.
Hmm.
But I'm pretty casual too, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a lot of need to be wearing a suit for the places that I go to.
Right. So what would your casual clothing look like?
The flashier, the better. Mm-hmm. The more gaudy and flashy and garish I would probably go for.
What does garish mean to you? I know what the word means, but I mean, yeah. What do you mean by garish?
Just like bright colors. I might even wear paisleys. You and I were talking about paisley before, and I said I don't think I like paisley too much, but if I had everything I could possibly want, I'd probably be wearing paisley and, you know, lots of bright, high contrasting colors.
So what is stopping you from buying these high-colored... I mean, you can get fancy colors clothes for a cheap price now.
Yeah, I know, but I'm so bad at buying clothes. I can never look at a piece of clothing and envision it on myself.
Yeah.
You know, like I can't go to a store and go, oh, I like this. I would like to wear this. I just look at it and go, I don't know. Is that for me? I don't know. So I'm always reluctant to buy clothes. This is an area in my life where I do not like to spend money. So
no.
I'm always reluctant. I don't want to spend $80 for a pair of jeans or whatever, you know, whatever anything costs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spend that money on these things. So I tend to buy cheap clothes that I think I can wear. I look at my closet now and I go, there's only like 8 things that I can wear in here.
Really?
That I like to wear, yeah.
Oh. What about the t-shirts that you have that I think your mother-in-law bought you? How did that ever start?
Well, she would buy shirts for her son. Mm-hmm. And then he doesn't like them. So then he gives them to me because they're too flashy.
Oh, okay.
So I end up wearing the flashy shirts. And he wears the dull brown shirts. And then Mom notices. And then so she starts buying flashy shirts for me.
Oh, okay. I know when I first was on your show and I'd never seen a picture of you. And I remember saying, I want to guess what you look like.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do. That was funny.
I was like, oh, I think you're very conservative. And you were like, no, I'm not. I got a mohawk. And I was very surprised.
Right.
I don't know why. You were so concise and, all right, everybody, let's just settle down here. And like, who is this talking?
My commanding personality.
Yes. And well, you've used that tone of voice on me many times.
Right.
Is this something you do with all your friends, or you just save that for me?
I save that for my close personal friends and people on the 911 phone line. Stop talking. Listen to me. Listen to my questions.
Okay. Well, we should probably wrap it up. It's come to be about an hour, unless you have anything else you want to talk about.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Before we go, I just want to say a quick hello to the Gales, who has written me as well recently.
In email form?
Yeah, exactly. The Gales has written us both before to Drive Time Chinopa, and I think you've had your own interactions with the Gales.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to say hello to the Gales.
Hello.
And to our regular people who respond to our Drive Time Chinopas, such as Ranger John, who always writes us.
He got a kitty cat.
He certainly did. Lucky Cerulean Poontang.
I don't know how I feel about that name.
It is a bit odd, but that's Ranger John and Daniel for you.
Just the Poontang part of it, that's all.
Yeah. So thanks to those people for staying in touch. And if you want to get a mention at the end of Drive Time Chinopa, like the Gales and Ranger John, you can email us too at fayandbrenda@gmail.com.
Sounds good to me.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye.